You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's noon on Grant and Danny. Time for the Beltway Blitz. Multiple teams in town you care about every day, jam-packed into one segment. We'll start you off with the football club. J.P. Finley covers the Redskins for NBC Sports Washington. J.P. Mel Kiper had the Redskins taking Baker Mayfield, 13th overall in a mock draft he released today. Your thoughts?
Well, that's now the second, you know, prominent draft guy to put Baker to the Redskins. Matt Miller of Bleacher Report did it earlier this week. It's going to get interesting. It's far too premature to really know much. It's not like any NFL team out there has a draft board yet. They're still doing self-evaluation, and there's still four teams playing. You know, it's premature all the way around, but I think at some point the Redskins really do have to consider a QB in the first round. They have to lay it roll. It will be very obvious what's going to happen. Long-term deal is possible.
I'm going to throw JP on hold so we can sort out his phone.
Was he disagreeing with us? Is that why his phone didn't work? Is that what happened?
I think it was because cell phones occasionally don't work.
Huh.
And so sometimes when you're on a cell phone and you're on the move, you'll lose some signal while trying to converse with a pal.
Just over there sabotaging the phone. That's what I was doing. I'm sure.
Is your allegation that you weren't doing that?
That's my allegation. I was sitting here listening to him talk.
By the way, he makes a good point, though, that you've got multiple draft experts with Miller and Kiper now, both saying Baker Mayfield. What'd you make of yesterday when we asked who people want the Redskins to take at 13?
And it was unanimous almost.
That the first several people that called in said Vita Vea, the D-tackle from Washington.
It says that everybody kind of recognizes the need, I think. It's that you've run this 34 and you've had guys kind of, as I always put it, when I had an internship at various points in my life, nobody wanted to do the filing. All the interns had to take turn filing. That's what the nose tackle is in this 34. If you don't have a true nose, everyone has to kind of rotate doing that on early downs, and nobody likes to do it. That may solve that position finally. Everybody recognizes the need of good defensive linemen in this scheme that the Redskins, frankly, haven't had.
JP, finish your thought on that, buddy. Sorry about that.
If the Redskins don't have a long-term deal done with Kirk Cousins, they should absolutely be looking at a QB with their first-round draft pick if the guy they like is there at 13.
All right, JP, we were talking about this early on in the show. It seems like a lot of continuity. It seems like a lot of self-congratulation and backpatting out there in Ashburn, where not many changes are happening. It's, to me, says, hey, we think it's about injuries, and we like the group we've got, whether it's coaches, players, front office, et cetera. And I think that's dangerous because continuity is good if you've got everyone in the right roles. Continuity is not as good if you've got a bunch of Bruce Allen's best pals hanging out. Where are you at on that?
That's a tricky one because I think the big questions would be Greg Minuski and Ben Kotwicka, and you try not to be too reactionary. I think Minuski had that defense playing pretty well. I think two injuries really changed the scope between Jonathan Allen and Mason Foster. And then Kotwicka's been pretty good his first 2 years here, and injuries really have a trickle-down effect on special teams. Could you make a change? I think a change certainly on the special teams would be validated because while they haven't been bad like special teams were for the Redskins for so long, I don't know that you argue that they were particularly good either. One of the hardest things to evaluate with the special teams was kind of the demise of Jamison Crowder. What happened there? Because he was giving them, you know, good looks as a punt returner and in a few spots was able to kind of change games for them. And this year it just went totally backwards.
What do you think they're going to do at running back? They drafted Samaje Perine. He flashed a little bit, but I mean, he does not look like what it looks like in these conference championship round games this weekend when these speed players on the outside create mismatches. Do you think they're in the market for a guy on first, second down still?
Sure. It's tricky because, you know, they like Rob Kelly. They have Perine. Obviously, Chris Thompson's a big part of what they do. But this running back draft class is pretty loaded. I mean, imagine those guys that were running the ball for Georgia in the college football final. If you can sneak one of those guys, it's tough because they still need to address the defense so much. But now they're at a weird position that they need skill players on offense. And that hasn't really been the case, especially at the wideouts. But now you got to start looking at those positions again via the draft as well.
Former Bachelor contestant Jesse Palmer Finley, my last one for you here is this. If this offense is, let me even go back even further. Jay Gruden's never had good running games. He's had running attempts. He's been in the top 15 in that time. They've never had good rush offenses. Do you think it's even possible and worth pursuing for him to have a good rush offense, or would you just say, hey, this is not one of the strengths of the coach and accentuate what they do well?
Was Uncle Joey on Full House's name Dave Rouillet? Do I have that right?
Dave Coulier. Dave Coulier.
Oh, man, my French Coulier. Names just botched that one. Yes, you've got to pursue a strong run game. You have to. I mean, the old Oilers teams, run and shoot, even ran the ball well. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be the primary focus of what you do. Like, if you look at Jacksonville, that's what they are going to do. The Redskins probably will never be that team, but they've got to be better than they were in 2017.
Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
See you, dude.
Thanks, fellas.
Let's talk some hoops. Nick Handsome. You know him as Nick Ashew.
So
you hear
hot
him
right now.
Night here on 106.7, the fan from time to time. Nicholas, the Wizards were terrible last night. Another loss to a bad team. This one, they gave up 133 points.
I had to just turn the thing off after a while. I started throwing up in my mouth and realized that this was just not good for my health anymore to watch it. They're so bad defensively right now. They've given up 100 or more points in 16 straight games. That's the worst in the NBA right now. Their defense is about effort, too, guys, and you just don't see the effort from them. And I'll give you an example. Like, everybody was worried that the Celtics defense wasn't going to be the same after the trade for Kyrie Irving and all these new players were coming
in. They lost Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley.
And guess what? They're number two in the NBA in points allowed right now. There's effort involved in this.
Who is to blame for the Wizards' defensive woes?
Everybody. Every single one of them. Scott Brooks included. I mean, Scott Brooks has never been known for being a defensive coach. I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. It's always been about offense first with him. He's not Mike D'Antoni, but it's been along those lines where he's more of an offensive guy. But everybody on this team is to blame, at least in some capacity right now. I mean, even Kelly Oubre, who is a good defensive player at times, you see a lack of effort from every single person on that court. And it's really starting to get frustrating because if this continues with this team, they could put themselves in a really, really bad position.
What's going on with Otto Porter? It doesn't look right, right? It's the scoring isn't there. He doesn't look explosive. Is the hip injury this bad? What are we talking about?
He's talked about his back and his hip still being a little tight, and he's not really in, you know, full game shape. But, I mean, come on. We're into January now, into the season. I understand he missed one game because of that injury recently. That's not enough to put you in a position where you look this sloppy, this slow, this just – there's not a lot of – we've always said this about Otto Porter, though. Like, let's be honest, he's a guy that isn't really that assertive on a consistent basis, especially offensively, where you have to kind of help set him up. He needs a little oomph. They have to be like, come on, Otto, you can do this. Here's the ball. Take a shot. And he's got the ability, but he doesn't really have that fire to necessarily do it. But, look, Scott Brooks saying that he's going to change the lineup, I'm all for it. I don't know what he's going to do because who do you take out of the lineup to then put, let's say, Oubre in? Then you're going to either have too many small forwards on the bench or, you know, too many center. Like, it's not going to put them in the same rotation that they had before. They're going to have to figure it out. But you got to do something. You cannot continue going down this road right
now.
That's
my question. What changes do you think? I think Markieff Morris needs to sit down for a while. I think I probably said Otto until and rest him a little
bit.
What do you think?
One of their best lineups has always been, if you want to look at plus minuses and all those nerdy stats that are out there. I keep whacking your computer here. I've done it three times in a row now because I move my hands a lot there. They're really good with Oubre in the starting lineup. The question is, do they put him at four and keep Gortat in there, or do they move Markieff Morris to the five? Some of that's just matchups. It depends on the teams that they're playing as well. But at this point, it's got to be Oubre. But then you have to figure out, okay, who comes off the bench and what time? Who do we take out of that starting lineup first? That's going to be the next thing that Scott Brooks has to figure out.
Whose regression has hurt them the most? Wall's numbers are down. He's obviously not 100% healthy. Beal's shooting is down. Keith Morris looks like a C version of himself. Gortat can't defend the rim. Who's stepping backwards has hurt them the most?
It's Markieff Morris to me, because Markieff Morris was a guy that we really depended on to be more of a stretch four for them, be a tough guy, go out and get you maybe 12 points, 7 or 8 rebounds. The numbers are even lower than that. Gortat's playing in an NBA that's really outrun him now at this point, literally. So I didn't expect him to continue to be, and he's even said himself, like, I'm not going to change who I am. I'll play a couple more years, and that'll basically be it. But Markieff Morris is really the biggest disappointment to me right now.
Sorry, I got distracted. I was just looking at your hair.
Thank you. I did it this morning. Just quickly,
what,
you know, that's it.
What gel do you put in there?
I have the Old Spice. Actually has a pretty good product that
Does
I like
it?
To use. Yeah, I don't do the $17, $18 stuff anymore. It's a waste of money.
You do the Dapper Dan pomade?
Yeah. By the way, are you guys vampires? It's like 5 degrees in this studio and pitch black. I feel like
so
I'm in a cave right now.
Well, yes. when you're ugly and pudgy, you want as little light as possible.
You two
are
beautiful. You stop it. You're beautiful men with great beards.
It means so much when the best looking guy in school tells us that we're also good.
When you get a compliment from the handsomest handsome that's ever handsome.
Nicholas Handsome. He's at Nick Handsome on Twitter.
Well, sort of, not really.
And Danny. On the fan. What are you actually on
just
Twitter?
It's Nick Ashew, the normal name.
Oh,
it
should be Nick Handsome.
Yeah, well,
I probably won't do that. I'm not going to lie. I won't.
At Nick Handsome. See if it's available.
It might be, but I'm not going to do it.
Tommy, see if that's available.
Okay. Nick.
All right.
Grant and Danny on the fan.
Handsome.
Next, when they get into Conference Championship Sunday, who are you going to be rooting for this weekend? I'm Grant. He's Danny. This is the fan. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, a story just came out in Sports Weekly that discusses some landing spots for Kirk Cousins and ranks where the best spot for him to go to is. And I don't think they could be more wrong, by the way. The number one landing spot for Kirk Cousins is probably the one I'd list like 30 seconds.
Ooh.
Just so we're all on the same
page. I'm intrigued by that.
So we'll get into that next hour. Wanted to take the temperature of our listening audience, though, with the conference championship games being played on Sunday to figure out who you are now rooting for. We've got two new matchups here. We've got you can't say David Goliath AFC title game because Jacksonville's too good for that, but we've got a Goliath light and Goliath, heavy underdog Jacksonville on the road in New England at Foxborough to take on the Pats. And in the NFC, you've got little engine who could, the Minnesota Vikings with Case Keenum, taking on an Eagles team that would be heavy favorites if Carson Wentz was healthy, but because he's not, everyone thought they were going to lose last week, and here they are. And what's the line on that game? I'm guessing they're going to be installed as favorites at home at a tough place to go to and win in December, January. Late season weather generally means they pick up victories.
Let me tell you in a second here. New England, 8.5-point favorites, and Minnesota, 3-point favorite on the ROAD.
They are?
Yeah, 3-point favorite.
That's the Nick Foles effect. Because you get 3 points for being at home. So that means Vegas thinks the Vikings are 6 points better than the Eagles.
Yeah, the Eagles are a touchdown worse because of the Nick Foles.
Philly's defense, people do not respect them.
Yeah, it's reflected here. Over-under's 38.5. That tells you they don't think it's going to be a high-scoring affair.
Right around 20-17, something like that.
Somewhere in that.
Is what they're banking on. What Super Bowl matchup do you want? Let's workshop this, both games here, Danny, and then we'll take calls. 800-636-1067. Start in the NFC.
To me, this is very simple. I am holding both hands now out sideways in a wide open palms kind of motion. I'm now going to reach them over my head to clap once. I'm scolding anyone but Philly. Anyone but Philly. I would root for so many fascist regimes over Philly. Anyone but the Eagles. No to the Eagles. No, 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 no. Let's go Minnesota. Minnesota, please. Give me that. Bring me a home Super Bowl. I want Minnesota. It's more about not wanting Philly than it is about wanting Minnesota, but I really, really, really want Minnesota to do it.
Are there any Redskins fans out there that are rooting for the Eagles for some weird reason?
There are, and this is a weird thing.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, I promise you. My dad and I used to get in this argument all the time.
I've heard about this argument.
I find it to be the craziest stance that he has about anything. I respect the man immensely. I love him so much. He's my father. I think he's been dead wrong about this since I was a child. He tried to imprint it upon me, and I rejected it instantaneously and said, no, your teachings are unwise in this area. He believes that you root for the NFC East to succeed and thrive, like rooting for some weird sort of like conference alignment.
The tide rises and your boat looks better.
Or something. Like you lose to the Cowboys, you want the Cowboys to win because it makes you look better. No. I hate those three teams in our division so much. Any success for them is like a knife to the kidney. No. I want all of them to go 0-16 at all times. It's not mathematically possible.
I'm Team Danny here.
But that's what I would
want.
What's
your dad's name?
Dan, also.
Are you a junior?
I'm not. It's a weird bit.
No!
I want misfortune.
You're the kid with a different middle name who's not a junior?
Well, it's actually kind of a sad story, but I'll give it to you.
Oh, no.
As I'm being born down the hall, my father's mother basically is on life support and is getting ready to expire, and she made him promise in the last moment that the firstborn son in our family for years has been named Daniel. Will you name your son Daniel? And he's like, yeah.
Said that to him?
Yes. And he was like, oh, yeah, okay. And so
did they audible at the line? You weren't supposed to be Daniel?
Wasn't supposed to be. Had something else completely different picked out. And so he basically walked into the room with mom. He's like, I think I just named our son. Sorry. this is what it is. And it's like, okay, I guess that's what we're going with.
Oh, my gosh. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot to deal with right there. You stumbled onto it at 12:22. Didn't know what you're getting into.
I had no idea what I was stepping into there. So what's your dad's middle name?
William.
Oh, which we came. I got you.
See what we did? A little full circle?
Absolutely. I like that move.
Yeah.
So it's like we got a thing developing here.
We snaked it a little bit.
So then Bill Rowland's kid might be Daniel again.
It certainly could be.
We don't know, though.
So I broke the traditions. I was like, I don't want to do the thing we did the entire. Now, it wouldn't be an issue now because everyone's got their own phone. But growing up, it's, hello, can I speak to Dan or Danny? You want Big Dan or Little Dan? But then we were the same size. Do you want Old Dan or Young Dan? Like, I'm never doing that again.
You did Big Dan, Little Dan?
Yeah, I'm not having that in the house.
I don't size for that.
Dan. I didn't either. Oh, I couldn't stand it.
That's so funny.
I'd be like, I'm not little. I'm 15. But
you know, Tommy was Little Tom? Because I think there's a Big Tom in the picture as well. Your dad is Tom?
Yes.
So
both
are you
dads,
a junior?
Both dads named Tom.
Wait, what do you mean both dads?
Real dad, stepdad, both named Tom, yeah.
Sitcom, House of Toms.
Hold on. So time out a second.
Tom's house.
20 seconds on the coach. Were you a junior?
No, I'm a two.
How do you do a two?
Like, because the middle name's different. So I'm Tom Daly.
So you're the same as so are you a two?
No, I'm not a junior.
No, but he says he's not a junior, but
middle
he's a
name,
two.
Middle name means it can get you a two. If it's different.
You could have a two if you want, but we opted not to have the two. So protocol is, if you're the same name all the way through, you're a junior.
Is this a thing that a lot of people do where they name the kid the same name, but you're not a junior?
I mean, there's a lot of football players that have numerals on the back of their uniforms.
I always thought that the numerals, like twos, threes, whatever, I always thought that was just like saying junior or the third. Is that not what's happening?
Well, I think the third can be a junior.
Uh-oh. Yeah, that's the double junior. So if Dale Earnhardt Jr. has a kid, he becomes Dale Earnhardt the second, and Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s son is the third. That's D3 for if you're scoring at home.
There's a lot going on here,
Dale. I want to double-click, by the way.
I'm just surprised the guy that went to St. Albans isn't a two.
I'm fairly shocked by that as well.
Well, the plan wasn't for me to go there. My dad went to St. John's, where you matriculated high school, my friend, and that was the plan all along. And then next thing you know, I'm like in this pipeline, and they were kind of ambushed by that whole St. Albans situation.
Wait, how did you end up at St. Albans then?
So my grandmother.
By the way, what a segment this has become.
My grandmother, in her basically her retirement job, as she just decided to go do it, she was the librarian at the elementary school at the cathedral, which is called Beauvoir. So that's right there. It's nursery school through third grade. And so we're living out in, you know, Northern Virginia and Pymmit Hills. And they moved there so I could go to public school and maybe go to St. John's one day. But who knows? And so all of a sudden, my grandmother gets this job, and she's like, well, little Danny, or Little Dan, whatever you want to call him.
Little Dan.
Of course you guys are going to apply to this really good school, right? And they're like, oh, we hadn't planned on it. I guess we will. So I applied to get into kindergarten. I didn't, like, stab anybody at the interview, so I got in. And the feeder school is right there through St. Albans. So kindergarten through 12th grade, right there.
St. Albans starts in kindergarten?
No, the feeder school. Kindergarten. Beauvoir goes nursery
Beauvoir.
Through third.
Okay. I don't
and
know.
The feeder school is St. Albans. It feeds right into it. So you graduate from Beauvoir again. If you don't stab anybody, light anything on fire, demonstrate you can read and color between the lines, you get into St. Albans. The next thing you know, you're there 4th through 12th.
St. Albans, Rouillet.
It wasn't the plan, but that's what happened.
But it was the plan from kindergarten on.
Yeah, once
that's
I got in, it was like
a developing plan.
Yeah, well, I guess here we are. This is what we're doing.
From age 6 to about 14, that was the plan.
I didn't know I was locked in, but they kind of realized that after a few years, going, oh, this is all kind of set. The course is done.
Wow. Well, we learned a lot about Danny's past in this segment. Anything else you'd like to tell us?
I feel like we're good, right? We got a lot of info there.
I feel like I understand why you like Scotch so much now.
Right? I think we need more run on this idea of the sitcom of Tom's House, or like Three Toms. Or
I think Three Toms is pretty good.
House of Toms.
Yeah.
Tom and Tom and Tom.
Tom, Tom and Tom. Are you the only Thommy? Or are they also Thoms?
No. I'm the only Thom, but they are, you know, T-O-M.
Yeah.
And actually, my stepbrother... Tom as well.
Get out of here.
No. So wait.
And he's best friends with Tom Lavero.
So your dad is Tom and you're Tom. Then your stepdad is Tom and his kid is Tom?
Yeah.
Is it the real name Thomas or is it all actual just like straight Thoms?
No. We're all Thomas, but you know, there's all variations of what our short name is.
Is your mom's name Tom also?
No, might as well be.
That would be really funny. If you had five Thoms
House
under one.
House of Toms.
Wow, that's amazing. All right, let's get back into what team you're going to root for this weekend next. How about that?
Let's go Vikings.
I'm rooting for the Minnesota Thoms this weekend. Brant and Danny on the Fan.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We got two games remaining before the Super Bowl. Conference titles on the line on Sunday. NFC game, Vikings at Eagles. AFC game, Jags at Patriots. Who are you rooting for is what we want to know. 800-636-1067. Danny's made it very clear he wants the Eagles to lose on the NFC side of the slate. So do I, by the way. One, they're in the division. They're rivals. I've dealt with enough Eagles fans over the years at FedEx Field and around town to just not want to see good things for them. But I also really like the way the Minnesota Vikings have gone about this.
Yeah, me too.
They overcame a ton of adversity in the last calendar year dating back to when their head coach, we thought at one point, might be losing his vision. Remember everything that Mike Zimmer was going through? Zimmer was passed over job after job after job. Couldn't get a head coaching job for whatever reason. Finally got one. Has done a great job. I think Case Keenum is an exceptionally likable person. I think he seems to be a really good dude who has just grinded and worked his butt off. Was never anybody's first choice. Was not even Minnesota's second choice. Here he is now on the precipice of getting to start in a Super Bowl game in a year in which he has played brilliant football. I also think...
You got a few of those stories, by the way. Adam Thielen, Willie the walk-on. Stephon Diggs, a fifth-rounder. Passed on by everybody, you know, almost everybody in the league five times. Turns into a star, has the game-winning play. They got a bunch of guys like that.
I also think it's good for the league when teams like this do well, that build with the defense, that try to run the ball, that kind of throw it back a handful of years ago, because it shows you that there's other ways to do this. Than
a lot of ways to skin it.
Having Aaron Rodgers, having Drew Brees, having Tom Brady, having Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. You can do it a different way. That you don't need to have the best coach and the best quarterback. And it's not just that we're going to roll the footballs out and the same teams are going to win every year. There's nothing about the Vikings I would actively root against. I don't know when the last time in a Super Bowl game I didn't look at a team and say, man, there's nothing I hate about them. There's nothing I dislike. There's no player I can't stand on that team. That's how I feel about Minnesota. On the AFC side, I think it's going to be really hard to find anyone that isn't a Patriots fan rooting for the Patriots. Unless you just really appreciate and want greatness and you love seeing the best thrive and you root for Federer to get to the finals and Nadal to win in every tournament he's ever in, maybe if that's your personality. It's not mine. I like the underdogs. I like when teams that aren't supposed to win do. I like seeing different teams emerge victorious. I want to see a different champion every single year. I like parity. So I'd love to see the Jaguars, especially just because I think it'd be hilarious to see Blake Bortles start in a Super Bowl.
So I don't necessarily have that close of a paradigm. I like when the best teams get rewarded for being the best teams, if that makes any sense, because I want a good process. I don't like the idea of, yeah, just get in and see what happens. The occasional upset, I think, should be just that. I think it should be occasional. But I then go to, I guess I like parity as much as the next guy. There are certain teams that I just hate, though. So I hate all the NFC East teams. I hate the Patriots. Sick of them. Sick of all the Patriots fans. Think so sick of entitled New England and Boston fans. Please suffer for 100 years. Go back to that. That's way more fun for everyone else. But like, and for college basketball, I don't mind it if Kansas is always in the Final Four. I don't mind it if Kentucky is. I do mind it when Duke is because I hate Duke. So it's I selectively apply my what I root for. I basically have a few teams that I root against and everything else is gravy because the Redskins are my team is always, of course, eliminated and out of it. So my priorities, as always, are NFC's teams to lose and be embarrassed and feel shame, and I want their fans to be sad and repent. Then after that, I hate the Patriots, hate the Yankees, hate Duke. The rest of it's gravy. You know what I mean? The rest of it, I'd like for some of those new teams to be able to get in there because I'm with you. I like when the upstart organization gets to do it.
But think about a Minnesota-Jacksonville Super Bowl in Minnesota, by the way, which is another amazing story.
I think it'd be so cool.
What would people root against? Like, how fun would it be to sit down and just get ready to eat all day long and watch all the pregame coverage and shows and everything going on that Sunday, and there's nothing you actively root against? It's been so long since there wasn't. I think the word that Wookie used on Twitter is he said, we haven't had a Super Bowl without a villain in a long time. Who's the villain? It's just, let's have a great football game. May the best team win. I love that.
Let's eat some wings, drink some beer, and see a lot of touchdowns. We're all out of touchdowns.
Also, a defensive struggle in the Super Bowl would be great for me. I know people want scoring and points, and all they care about is hanging 40 burgers.
I just want excitement.
10-7 would be just fine for me in a Super Bowl. Ooh. So many big tackles and sacks and pressures. I love it. Let's go to Alex in Wheaton on Grant and Danny. What are you pulling for this weekend?
Well, I'm with you guys. I mean, I'd rather see around entertainment and Vikings-Jags Super Bowl, but just to Danny's point, playing devil's advocate, don't you think there's a perverse possibility that winning might be worse for the Eagles and better for the Redskins in the long run?
Them getting to a Super Bowl isn't good. I know what you're saying, meaning it'll be hard to sustain it.
Unless they're a dynastic team, which I don't think they're going to prove to be.
It's
defense is struggling. The Super Bowl would be great for me.
Oh, you listen. He got himself on the radio now. Okay. He listened to us 10 seconds ago. I got confused. So here's what I'm going to say. I understand your point.
Well, is his argument that if they don't win the Super Bowl, it's worse news because then you're still thirsty to get back?
Yeah, or it's the, will they be able to kind of repeat this performance that they've had? Are they immune to the eventual Super Bowl hangover, kind of whatever? Is this a sustainable thing?
Well, next year you come back, Wentz is only going to be, I would think, assuming he's healthy, a little bit better. Like, this is the beginning of a window. There's absolutely nothing saying they can't be great for the next 4 years. So, for me, I would, if you're a Redskins fan, root against them winning every chance you get to. This is an opportunity where they could very easily win the Super Bowl, and if they don't, who's to say they get back here? You have injuries next year. I will guarantee you, I'd bet any money I have, they won't have as good a record next year as they had this year.
And that's kind of where I'm
going. A lot of things went well.
I need them to lose as soon as possible. I understand the point, but that's playing a dangerous game. I don't want to play that game. I don't want to play the game where they have any more success. I wanted them to lose last week. I'm still pissed at Atlanta, pissed at Steve Sarkisian for not being able to put the ball in the end zone. Screw you guys. I'm going home. Lose Philly. Just lose. You got to this point. I want them to lose. I want their fans to be sad. It's so important to me.
Let's go to Ben, who is in Rockville on Grant and Danny. What's up, Ben? How are you?
Hey, guys. I love you guys. But I got to tell you, I mean, I 100% agree with you. I cannot stand Philly fans, but I'll tell you right now, I can't stand Patriots fans more. There are only three states that love the Patriots: New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts. Otherwise, I don't think anyone likes Patriots fans. So, quite frankly, if they're in a Super Bowl, even against the NFC East team, I really don't care. I want to see them lose. I can't stand the Patriots.
Wow! So you would root for the Eagles to win their first Super Bowl if they were playing the Pats?
Quite frankly, the Patriots are cheaters, and their fans are a-holes next to the Eagles. Those are the only two teams I view as a-holes, but you know what? I'll take a loss just to see the Patriots lose.
Wow.
Their fans are jerks. They only have three states rooting for the Patriots. The rest of those fans move around for jobs in D.C. area and other places, and they're still jerks.
Thanks, buddy. A lot of times I think when people make fun of fan bases and how big a jerk or a tool like a fan is from because they like that team, I'm like, that's overstated. I've been around enough Patriots fans who act like clowns to know that that's a real thing. I think I told you the story about watching the NFL draft at a sports bar with a Patriots fan who knew nothing about football or the Patriots, and he was the loudest guy in the bar, and he was completely annoying and talking about just so out of his depth on everything he was saying made no sense.
There's such comfort.
It was the day they drafted Jacoby Brissett, so it was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. I was in Reston Town Center at an event for Lorenzo Alexander. But I would root for New England over the Eagles in the Super Bowl.
I would too, 100%.
If they both win and they get to the Super Bowl, I think one of the cool things if you're a Redskins fan you have over Philadelphia is you always get to say, as they're being mean to you, that they've never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I rooted for them over the Giants too, by the way, both times.
I did. I rooted for them in Jacksonville over Philadelphia years ago when Paul McCartney performed at halftime.
That's right.
I was at that Super Bowl.
I need that.
Owens came back to play with Donovan McNabb.
That was incredible. I need Philadelphia not to win. That's so important to me. Again, there is that school of, hey, they're our rivals in the NFC East, but it's good for us somehow if they do it. I've never understood that. I need my enemies to be as miserable as I am. If I'm going to eat that misery and I'm going to swallow it down because I love a team that can't do it, I need them not to be able to do it either. And the fact that the Giants now have more Super Bowls disgusts me.
Let's do this next. A list came out of the best homes for Kirk Cousins, and I think that the number one team listed makes no sense. I'm going to read it to you. I want to get your reaction as well. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. 1 o'clock, Grant and Danny here on The Fan, the big one. We'll give you some of the best audio last couple of days as the Final Four in the NFL prepare to meet one another in Championship Sunday action. So this was via SportingNews.com. Kirk Cousins' best options in NFL free agency were ranked.
Now, I haven't seen this purposefully so that you could surprise me with whatever it was.
They listed six teams. Where do you think the Redskins ranked among the six?
I'd say middle of the pack. I would guess three or four.
They tied for fourth.
There you go.
Sixth, the Buffalo Bills. They say 5% chance he goes there. Buffalo made a big change, they write, in offensive philosophy by replacing Rick Dennison as their offensive coordinator with Brian Daboll. It would have been a much better fit for Cousins had the Bills stayed put with their offensive coordinating job, which I agree with. Fifth, tied for fourth, the New York Jets.
Okay.
They list them at 10%. New York has also fired its OC, John Morton, getting out of Eric Coryell's scheme that didn't quite mesh with Todd Bowles' defense-first mentality. Todd Haley recently fired from the Steelers as the strongest candidate to replace him. By the way, if they go get Todd Haley, if I'm Kirk Cousins, the Jets look like a much better fit. Their defense is not terrible. They need to find a passer. They have $74 million in cap space that they could upgrade at a bunch of positions, including passer.
You would, and receiver as well. As much as Robbie Anderson was a nice story, they need better weapons.
But I think, even though Todd Haley's a bit of a nut job, it seems like, that's a guy that is going to design an offense that you can thrive in.
Again, you can make nice music without liking the conductor.
They put the Redskins 10% chance he lands there. Say tied for fourth. Makes no sense for Washington to use another franchise tag, two-thirds of its $52 million cap, on keeping him around for one more year, which we've talked about. The team that they say makes the most sense for Kirk Cousins, and this is, again, from Kirk's perspective, the Cleveland Browns.
Nope.
Why?
That's 32 out of 32.
Why?
Nope.
If I'm Kirk, I would consider Cleveland because they have committed to a coach, even though he's one who's gone 1-31 the last 2 years, who, for whatever reason, quarterbacks like working with. I would consider them because they have money and they can upgrade the offensive personnel around me over the next couple of years. But who's going to be their OC? Now, here's something that could be interesting. This is what they wrote. Cleveland is going to have the West Coast intact as Hugh Jackson adds on offensive coordinator, with former Giants coach Ben McAdoo as the leading candidate. Cousins has also said he would seriously consider playing for the Browns. Kind of. I mean, he probably is going to say that about any team that comes up right now. Why would you in any way mitigate or knock down the number of teams you're considering? The market should be as big as possible. That's how you end up benefiting the most. He says despite their 2017 season, he's considering them. At a whopping $110 million under the cap, which, by the way, is
a staggering number. It's a staggering number.
I can't even wrap my head around that. The Browns have plenty of space. Using some of that to lock up Cousins would still give GM John Dorsey, who's brand new, a ton to spend elsewhere in free agency. The Browns could then also draft the best player available at number one and at number four. So here is the case if you're Cousins. The case against the Browns is, it's Cleveland, this is where quarterbacks go to die, they've been awful the last couple of years, end of story, I'm not playing there. That's pretty much the end of the case.
Yeah, I'd add to it also, by the way, this isn't as if Cousins is 24 making this decision.
True.
He's 30 years old. And yeah, they'll be able to offer him money and maybe the situation improves, but think about how far you have to go just to get back to where you are now, which is a mediocre program.
You're probably two seasons away from being 8-8.
Yeah, you've got to be the guy to help change the culture, and it still may not work.
But
no,
here is the case for, though. You have two top five picks. If when they're negotiating with you, they say, hey, we're going to draft a wide receiver and a running back. We're going to take, after trading down, the number one wide receiver in the class and Saquon Barkley. And we're adding that to Duke Johnson, Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, David Njoku. That's some weapons around you now.
Yeah, it's a couple
if they
nice
say
pieces.
We're going to take the best offensive lineman and Saquon Barkley. Oh, by the way, our front office structure is better than the one you're coming from in Washington. Yes, the Browns have been terrible for years, but that was not John Dorsey's fault. That was not Alonzo Highsmith's fault. We're going to make sure that we fix this thing. And our offensive coordinator, you can laugh at Ben McAdoo's haircut if you want to because he was a terrible head coach. He's a really good OC. Remember how good he was in New York?
Absolutely.
How much they loved him? So we got an offense that is easy to play in that made Eli Manning a lot better the last couple of seasons when McAdoo was his offensive coordinator. We've got an offense that fits you. We've got two top five picks. We've got some young talent, and we've got $100 million to spend. That's a decent case to make.
It is.
I still wouldn't want to go there if I'm Kirk Cousins, but maybe it's not as bad as you and I think it is.
I think it is every bit as bad because your case is good. Chris Russell, the day you were out for your bachelor party, made that exact same case. This is a new executive team. They've had new executive teams. They got a lot of cap
this
space.
This is the best executive team they've had.
On paper. On paper, there's still something very Clevelandy about it. Same owner, they're deciding to stay with the same coach who's, by all accounts, terrible. I don't know why he's considered still an offensive guru. Their offenses aren't very good, despite all these weapons that they supposedly have. They're an embarrassment. They are the worst. Maybe they climb out of the cellar. We're talking about miles to go to be okay. Miles to go before they're an embarrassment. They probably should have won two or three games this year. Should have. That's where we are, by the way. It is a team that is kicking themselves, woulda, coulda, shoulda, on a couple late leads they blew to go 3-13. They are a disaster. Nobody should go
but
to Cleveland.
But I think by most accounts, with the money they're going to spend this offseason and their two top five picks, I think most people would say they're probably going to be around 5-11, 6-10 this year.
Yeah, I would say the
arrows. At that point, you're a game away from what the Redskins were this year.
And that's my point, is you have to climb out to get to that same spot. The arrow was trending up for an 0-16 team. You're absolutely right about that. And so was Russell when we argued about this last Friday. The arrow was not pointing down for the Cleveland Browns. The amount that you've got to go just to be okay, I'm not wasting my time with that from Kirk Cousins. If he really truly believes that winning is the most important thing,
right?
That tells you that that's not the most important thing. Wanting to be wanted is the most important thing. Getting the paycheck that shows how much somebody cares and wants him to be their leader would be the most important thing. I don't fault that, by the way, but if you believe him and in so much as I'd like to go somewhere where I can win,
yeah,
it's a huge gamble to go there. I would never do it.
This piece in Sporting News ranks the Minnesota Vikings second in terms of best spot for Kirk Cousins.
Oh, buddy.
25% chance. They say Case Keenum's on the brink of playing well enough to take Minnesota to the Super Bowl, but he, along with Bradford and Bridgewater, are set to be unrestricted free agents. Pat Shurmur's reportedly also about to create a vacancy when he goes to be the Giants head coach. It's weird to think that a team that could win it all this year might actually upgrade a quarterback, but the Vikings would have an opportunity to do that. What if Minnesota gets together and says, let's go get Cousins?
Why not?
Cousins is a much better version of Keenum, a better version of Bradford, a much better version than Bridgewater. We got some money. Let's pay Kirk Cousins, and we could get him to come at a discount.
He could
come here for $21 million a year. He'd probably sign it to go win a Super Bowl next year.
I missed it if you said it, so I apologize. Was Arizona on that list?
It was not.
That, to me, is the one that's the golden landing spot for me.
Here is the only way I could see that emerging as suddenly a hot landing spot is if they hire the right head coach. And the right head coach for Kirk Cousins might be John DeFilippo, the guy who's the quarterback's coach with the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
who's getting a second interview with the Cardinals. He actually played his college football at the James Madison University.
The
Dukes. DeFilippo is a Philly quarterback's coach who's supposedly tight with Nate Sudfeld, mm-hmm. who is boys with Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of dots to connect here. But one of the things I've been thinking about is if Sudfeld got on the horn and said, Kirk, you'll love this guy, and he's in Arizona and they want to pay him, and DeFilippo says, this is the guy I want to build this thing around, that could be a landing spot.
I think that is a great job kind of laying in wait, and it's a great situation. David Johnson's on the way back. That weapon is as good as anybody, not named Le'Veon Bell in football, both as a receiver. I think their young core of receivers is underutilized and will certainly start to grow. Defensively, they were banged up a little bit this year, but I think that group is laying in wait to be really, really good again. They are, to me, head coach and a quarterback away.
AFC title game preview next. NFC title game in about 15 minutes. Blake Bortles was asked about getting to the Final Four and if this is him getting the last laugh after people poked fun at him all year long. What he said was interesting. We're Grant and Danny. You'll hear that next on The Fan.
True Pals, G&D for our boys at Window Nation. You feel that cold air coming into your home this winter? If so, Window Nation wants to keep you warm inside with their zero down, zero payments, and zero interest offer. It's just for a limited time. You got to act now. Get your new windows and keep all of the cold, hard cash in your warm pocket until next year. And this is even better. In addition to that triple zero situation, Window Nation is giving you 50% off any style, any size, any color window. 50% off, there's no limit, Grant.
Yeah, very experienced installers ready to go right now awaiting your call. Their installers have an average of 16 years experience, have installed over 350,000 windows. They know how to go room to room to keep you warm without interruption. Put them to work today. Get your home winterized with energy-efficient Window Nation windows. You're going to be warmly rewarded with lower bills, lower prices, and the lowest price of the year right now. Zero down, zero payment, zero interest until 2019, plus that 50% off for every window you buy. Now is the very best time for the very best deal in this brand new year. Call Window Nation today. The number is 866-90-NATION, 866-90-NATION, or visit them at windownation.com.
Tell them Grant and Danny sent you. Window Nation for your home when you need it. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.